Welcome to a Prevent Connect audio conference recording. The following was recorded on May 22nd at a Call to Men's 2009 Annual National Conference in New York City, New York. To learn more about A Call to Men, visit their website at www.acalltomen.org.
Can you say vagina monologues? It is with great pleasure that I bring up our next speaker, Eve Ensler, acclaimed playwright, performer, activist, and the person who gave women our voice back and our bodies. Eve, please.
Any vaginas in the house? It's really early for me. Trying to figure out what I'm even thinking. Only Ted Bunch would get me up at 9 o'clock to talk about anything. I am so honored to be, and I just want to say, if Quincy's not a vagina warrior, I don't know what a vagina warrior is, you know, really. You're awesome. You are awesome. I love Ted Bunch, and I love A Call to Men, and I'm so honored and privileged to be here. And to be with so many of you who are doing the real work, the everyday work, the grassroots activist work, the changing of lives, individual lives works. I really have this theory that the world is changing, and that there is a revolution afoot. And eventually it's just going to flip, and we're going to be in the new world because of all the work of people like you. I wish I could tell you, yesterday was a really hard day, and I'm kind of in a state of grief today. You know, some days doing this work, my inbox is so jammed with pain that it's hard to function. And sometimes there are great victories. Last night there was a victory, but yesterday was one of those days where it was almost too much. The day began at 2 in the morning. I couldn't sleep because I've been very worried about the Congo, which I'll talk a little bit about, where we have a huge campaign right now. And the last few weeks in the Congo have been really bad. Even though the world thinks everything's going well in the Congo, 1,100 women have been raped since January a month. That's 36 women a day. 36 women a day. So I just checked my email at 2 in the morning, and there was an email from my colleague who's running the head of VDay Congo, and she said that she had gotten a call at 5 in the morning about a little girl who was 3 years old, who had been gang raped, and she was waiting for her at the hospital because she wanted to receive her. Anyway, she waited for many hours. And she never made it. The girl died on the way. And she said that at the hospital, which is a hospital which has 400 women survivors, most of whom have fistula from being raped by so many terrible things being shoved inside them, you know, that people couldn't even handle just the idea that she didn't get there. And the day began there for me at 2 in the morning, and I didn't sleep. And then throughout the day, I just kept getting emails. I got an email from a young girl at a college in America who had been a real V-Day activist who just did V-Day at our campus and raised $10,000. And a day later, she got sexually assaulted by one of her best friends and got a letter that she sent to me from a guy, which was the most sadistic letter I've ever read. And then I got a letter from Shanaz Bukhari, who we're supporting in Pakistan, who's opening the first shelter for women who have been acid burned. And she was just talking about the rise in acid burning as women try to claim their power in Pakistan. And then I got home last night, and I had promised I would watch this documentary called The Stoning of Soraya, which was probably the most disturbing documentary I've ever seen in my life, about a woman in Iran who was stoned to death by her father, her sons, and her husband, and her community. And the stoning takes place over a half hour in the film. And anyway, by the end of last night, I literally thought, okay, I just sat and I cried for a long time. And I just thought to myself, how is it possible that we're still in 2009? How is it possible that every day my inbox is jammed with these kind of messages and these kind of stories, endless stories. And I was really happy I was coming here today to talk with you all, particularly men, about what we're going to do to change this. What are we going to do as allies, as partners, as friends on this journey to stop violence against women and girls? You know, when I started all this 10 years ago, 11 years ago, I knew that violence against women was here and real. I'm a survivor of violence. I was raped and beaten by my own father. And I understand violence because my life is a consequence of violence. Everything about me is the result of violence. You know, I used to just walk around thinking I was just this kind of the end root of violence. You know, I was a broken person. I had no self-esteem. I had no sense of self. I wandered the world in search of identity and meaning and a point. And I think one of the terrible things about violence is that it robs you of your sense of self. It robs you of a right to be here. It eviscerates your DNA. It takes so many years to kind of rejoin yourselves to come up as a person who, believing you have a right to be here. And I'll tell you something, it doesn't matter how much success you have or how much external, it's still a journey for me every single day to believe I have a right to be here. Because violence does that to us. And so I look at myself, who is a very privileged person. I come from America, I'm white, I'm upper middle class. I had every kind of resources, and I look what it's taken for me to rebuild my chemistry, my emotional, psychological makeup, and I think of all the women I meet every single day who don't have anywhere near those kind of resources, what they are struggling with. So the need for men to be with us, you know, I've always said, why is it that this is a woman's movement to end violence against women? We don't rape ourselves. You know, we do not rape ourselves. We don't beat ourselves. We don't ask for it. We don't invite it. All those myths and stories. And I've always wondered, like, where are the men? Where are the men? I want to say I do not hate men. A lot of people think, used to say about the vagina monologues, it's a male bashing piece. You know, the irony was it wasn't about men. You see? And that's something men can't sometimes handle, you know? Right? It was actually about women, you see? And so men would come and say, it's about male bashing. I would say, no, honey, it's not about you, you know? And I think sometimes, how do you get the tension when you make it against me? You know, I think whenever you're for women, there's this interpretation that it's against men. And that's kind of like the way men are brought up. What is a man, not a woman? It's the same story. You know, in this film last night, there's a horrifying scene where this woman is buried up to her waist in the ground and tied, and there's a crowd of men with stones stoning her in her head to death. And the hatred those men had for that woman, I just sat there last night thinking, why do men hate women so much? Why do men hate women so much? What have men been taught that would make them hate us so much? Where is that contempt? Where is that contempt? What is a man who would kill his girlfriend because she doesn't want to be with him? And so I've been doing a lot of thinking about men. You know, when I started this movement, I had a lot of anger at men. I had a lot of anger at my father. I just had a lot of anger. I didn't trust men. I was broken by men. And I kept picking men, which happens to a lot of us survivors, is we keep picking men who remind us and are familiar, and usually they are bad boys or perpetrators, or, you know, people talk about Rihanna and you know, why Chris Brown, and why not? If your experience is that you are drawn to what you're familiar with, or drawn to what, it's this incredibly deep desire to overcome and change what was done to you. To find someone who mirrors somebody who was like your own perpetrator, and in the deep, heartfelt belief that you will transform that experience and make it right. And I admire women. Sometimes people say, well, how come that woman is with that guy? It's such a deep desire to make right, to make restitution, to transform your own suffering, which heals your suffering. And I've thought a lot about in the last 10 years, you know, I think one of the greatest things that's happened to me over this journey with V-Day is that I've come to really love men. Like, I look this morning at someone like Ted Bunch, and I walk in here and I think, I love Ted Bunch. I love the Ted Bunches. We need millions more Ted Bunches, you know? And I think that I've really come to understand that the tyranny of patriarchy, the tyranny of this masculinity, is much more devastating to men than it is to women. I mean, we're so far outside the circle of power that we're building our own world out here. You know, we have our souls on some level still intact because we're so not in this power structure. But I look at what is done to boys in the name of becoming men. I look at what is done to men in the name of becoming men. I look at the tyranny of heartlessness, the training to be separated from your heart, to be disassociated from your heart. What greater tyranny is there than to be separated from your heart? You know, whether it's being in Congo, where the combination of 20 million trillion years of colonialism and racism and degradation and poverty and intervention has robbed men of any connection to their heart. You know, people don't just wake up one day and kill people and rape people and hurt people and maim people. It's a journey to become a person who is capable to do that. It's a journey. And we all participate in that journey in the name of patriarchy. And that journey for me, I look at boys, you know, who are tender and open and vulnerable, V for vulnerable. I look at them and I look what is done to them to make them men. How when they cry, they're told that's not a man, that's not a man, that's not how men behave. When they ask questions, they're not even allowed to ask questions because you just have to know everything as a boy, even if you don't know it. And look at the state of the world that we're in because men pretended they knew everything, you know. I mean, it's like if men were brought up to ask questions, to be in the mystery, to feel their insecurity, to know they could cry, to feel their tenderness, to engage in a cooperative way in the world. Imagine where we'd be right now. Imagine what the world would look like. You know, I think for me, the Congo, you know, we've been involved in a lot of places in 11 years, and I'm very proud of this movement. I'm proud of all the women and men who are engaged in V-Day across the planet. We had an extraordinary year. We had 5,000 events, I think, in 1,400 places. We've raised, through grassroots individual activists, probably $70 million over the last 11 years. It's an unbelievable movement. I think of it and I think it's growing, it's changing, we're breaking through. But what's also going simultaneously, I think more as women come into their voices and into their power, there's this rise of reaction and violence. And I think it'll probably get worse for a while, in the same way in the civil rights movement that as African Americans came into their power, the reaction to them got more violent and more stronger in order to suppress it. One of the things I've had the privilege to do is travel the world, and in 11 years I've been in Bosnia, and I've been in Haiti, and I've been in Afghanistan, and I've been in Kosovo, and I've been in many war zones. And I've been all around America many times, and I've heard the worst stories in the world. But it wasn't until I met Dr. Denis Mukwege, I was invited to interview him on the behalf of the UN, and I met this man, and I want to talk a little bit about him today because he is my inspiration, that I understood violence against women in a whole new way. And he is a OBGYN from a place called the Panzi Hospital in Bukavu, Democratic Republic of Congo. And he's as close to being a saint as anybody gets in this world. And I never met a saint before. I never met a man who truly cherished women, who gave his life to cherish women without a need to control them or a hidden agenda or another story that was operating somewhere. And he has been in the Congo, really in a little village in a clinic for a long time, doing maternal care. And what he discovered is women were starting to arrive during the conflict whose vaginas and internal organs were just eviscerated and ripped apart. And what he realized was that the militias were targeting women and destroying their bodies as a systematic tactic of war. The war in Congo, for those of you who don't know, is an economic war. It's one of the richest countries in resources in all of Africa. It has a lot of tin and copper, but it mainly has something called coltan, which goes into our cell phones and our computers. And so the West gets a lot of our minerals and supplies from the Congo, but uses a lot of militias to get those minerals for us. We kind of rape and plunder the country, leaving the Congolese starving, and we get to have all our luxuries and products. And Dr. Mukwege was working in this village and his clinic, and hundreds of women started to arrive who had fistula, were missing their anuses, were missing their vaginas because of the kind of rapes that were going on. And of course he was horrified, but he stayed there by himself for a long time operating and trying to figure out what to do. And then his clinic was burned to the ground and most of his staff were murdered. And he, rather than leaving the country, which he easily could have done because he's a brilliant doctor, he moved to Bukavu and he opened a place called the Panzi Hospital. And the Panzi Hospital now serves at any given time between 200 and 300 women. There's actually 400 women there right now because so many women are being raped. And most of those women have suffered sexual violence. Most of them have fistulas. When I first went to the Panzi Hospital almost 2 years ago, I think I was shattered, and I don't think I'll ever be the same. And to be honest, I don't want to be the same. I don't want to be the same. When you see that kind of horror and atrocity happening to women's bodies, you can't ever be the same. I spent the first time 2 weeks there interviewing and talking and holding and listening to women, and I saw where colonialism, racism, capitalism all convened on the bodies of women. All convened on the bodies of women. Really beautiful, resilient, gorgeous women who asked for none of this. And I sat with 8-year-old girls who had been taken for weeks and raped by soldiers who were incontinent and peeing on themselves now because they had holes inside them. And I talked to 80-year-old women, and I talked to women who had had their children murdered in front of them and then were forced to eat them. And I heard atrocities that took my mind and shattered it, and I don't know if I'll ever get back. But what I became aware of then is that if we as human beings don't understand that violence against women and girls is the center of everything, you see, it's not something over here that we get to later. It's the point. Women are the center of civilization and life. They hold it, the future, literally in their bodies. They are what give us life. They are what sustain us. They are what create a future. If we eviscerate women and disrespect women and dishonor women and maim women and rape women and butcher women, we are essentially butchering our future and butchering life. And in the Congo right now, in the last 12 years, 6 million people have died. Most people don't even know that. It's estimated that somewhere between 200 and 500,000 women have been raped. And I'm telling you, when all is said and done, it's going to be much huger statistics than that. I fear that if we don't do radical support and intervention on behalf of the women of Congo, we will see femicide. We will see the desecration of the female population. And if we allow that to happen anywhere in the world, I promise you, it will begin to happen everywhere in the world. Because as we see economies collapsing, we saw in Sierra Leone, for example, that women were raped, 50% of the women in Sierra Leone were raped in order to support the diamond trade. And it wasn't until the Kimberley process came into being that it put sanctions on that and it stopped the raping. We see right now what is the sex trafficking industry is $7 to $12 billion a year. 3 million women are trafficked around the world, which is becoming one of the great tourist industries. You know, in Juarez, where I've spent a lot of time, in the maquiladoras, women are making $5 a day, and yet 400 women have been disappeared and murdered over the last 10 years, and not one person has been brought to justice because those women are serving U.S. multinationals. So we know that as the world becomes poorer and people need resources, women's bodies will be the way that is achieved. And I want to say that I'm giving my life to the Congo. I'm giving my life to the Congo because I believe if we can turn what is going on in the Congo around and support women there who are fierce, who are powerful, who with a tiny bit of resources could literally create a woman's revolution in that country and take back their country. If we don't support the women of Congo, we will literally begin to allow a place which will expand the boundaries for what is possible to do to women everywhere. Those are our sisters. The world is inseparable at this point. We are all one world. I want to say that Dr. Mukwege, I spoke to him a few days ago, and he was really depressed. And, you know, because he was here for a month touring, and I think he got very hopeful. And then he went back, and the first operation he had was a 9-year-old girl who was missing most of her body parts. And he said to me the other day, you know, I don't know that I can keep going. So I want to talk just a little bit about him, and then I'll stop. But, you know, what is it about Dr. Mukwege that I love? What is a V-man? I'm very happy to say that V-Day has now started. Men have come together to finally create V-men, which will be the men's wing of this movement. And, I mean, it's very, very exciting. And Ted Bunch and Rob Okerman, there's so many men in this room who are a part of that V-men's movement already. But Dr. Mukwege is the godfather of the movement, and because he has all the characteristics of a V-man. And when I first interviewed him at NYU Law School 2 years ago, at the end of the meeting, I said, "You are a true vagina warrior," and I've never said that to a man. And he was like, "Oui, je suis un vagina warrior, fantastique." And he walked around with his vagina warrior T-shirt all over Bukavu, and he was like, "Ah," you know. He always says that he and I know more about vaginas than anyone on the planet. But it's not incidental that he is an OBGYN, because he truly cherishes and honors vaginas. And he gets what women do and what women are capable of doing because he witnesses it all the time. He's utterly vulnerable. He has dedicated his life to women. And I was thinking yesterday how he's tired. He's really, really tired. He's been doing this 15 years, sewing up women as fast as the militias are ripping them apart. And he literally goes to the hospital in the morning, and there's a chalkboard, and there's a list of all the women he has to operate on that day, usually 12 women a day. And most of those women have been raped, and their bodies are destroyed. And I just try to imagine what it must be like for him every single morning to get to the hospital at 6. They do prayers and song, and then he begins his day operating on woman after woman after woman who's been raped and destroyed, and yet he keeps going. To me, that is a V-man. And what he does is advocate for women, and he holds their hand, and he sits with them, and he helps them find a way. Most of them name their children after him, you know, because that's the kind of man he is. And he's not arrogant, but he's strong. And he's not dominating, but he's definite. And he's tender, but he's not invisible. And I think all those characteristics to me make up what a V-man is. I say this all the time, but I don't think most men are perpetrators. Actually, I think most men are very beautiful. I think they want to be living in a different world, and they want to be tender, and they want to be engaged, and they want to be lost, and they want to admit how desperate they are and how needy they are and how open they are. But the circle of patriarchy makes that impossible, because if they were to do that, they would have to give up their status. They would have to give up their power. They would have to give up their exclusive role in patriarchy. And that's a scary thing to do. And I just want to say a few words about that, because, you know, when I came out and I started to talk about what my father had done to me, nobody, obviously, in my family wanted me to do that. It was going against the tribe. It was going against everything I've been taught to believe. You know, somebody once said to me, when you're a survivor, you have to choose between your family and your integrity. And it's a huge choice. And I remember when I finally made a decision to choose my integrity and my soul, and I knew I was going to be exiled from the tribe. I knew I was going to be exiled. Not only my family, but the world of kind of upper white middle class reality, which says you don't talk about this stuff, you don't bring this in public, you don't share it outside. There were so many levels. I made that decision a long time ago, and it has left me pretty much a nomad, an exile. And at the beginning, it was unbearable because I felt so lonely. I would not trade my status as a nomad today for anything. I would not trade my integrity and my soul for anything. It took me years to develop the muscle to say that. And in a way, I want to say to men, if enough of you, and Castro used to say it only takes 10% of the people to have a revolution, you don't need any more than that. We just need 10% of the men. We just need 10% of the men to be brave and to break ranks and to step outside patriarchy and to be nomads and declare this a new zone and declare masculinity a new masculinity and to be men in a different kind of way. That's all we need. And it may mean that you give up your power in the sense that you aren't part of the tribe, but I promise you, you get your real power. You get your real power, which is the power of your heart and the power of your humanity and the power of your soul. Yesterday I was doing an interview and we were talking about women and what's a powerful woman. And I was saying, you know, so many women are forced to believe that the way to be powerful is to imitate men. And then they get into power and they actually sometimes become worse than men in trying to show how much like men they are. And to me, a woman in power is not a woman being a man in power. It's a woman being a woman in power. And I was talking about Michelle Obama, because I think Michelle Obama epitomizes a woman in power, epitomizes a woman in power. And why do people love her? Why do people love Michelle Obama, essentially? Because she's kind. Because she's kind. She gets up and she bares her arms, which is bearing her vulnerability and her strength at the same time. And she sits down and she kneels down and she hugs children. And she is a part of, she's not above, she's a part of. She has become one of the most beloved women ever in my lifetime. And not because she's dominating people or hurting people or proving herself or showing herself, but because she's with people. She's one with people. That's what people hunger for. That's what. And I want to say that if men were willing to disarm their veneer and disarm their armor and be with each other, I promise not only would it make you feel good, but the whole planet would be transformed in that simple act. I stand with Call to Men. I stand with Ted Bunch. I stand with any man who is breaking bricks with patriarchy, who is breaking ranks with a distorted, ridiculous, outdated notion of what it means to be a man. And if you come out here and you come into the world of being an exile and a nomad, I promise you will have friends and you will have allies and you will have sisters with you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for joining Prevent Connect Audio. Prevent Connect Audio is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect Audio are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. You can contact us at info@preventconnect.org, or you can learn much more on our website at www.preventconnect.org.